Welcome to a brand new edition of Pili, Raul, and La Musica, presenting our very special series, Behind the Industry, where we talk with professionals and whether they're agents, managers, record labels, lawyers, you know, whoever is helping that up-and-coming artist to get them on the next Coachella or Lollapalooza or get their music on a TV show, film, or commercial, whatever it may be. You know, it's this type of person that really is helping that artist take it to the next level. So doing this behind the industry has been very eye-opening. Que no, Pili?
Oh my God, we've learned so much. You know, we've interviewed people who book artists for music festivals, and that was a big eye opener because I didn't know any of that, yeah. Even though we've been to so many festivals, right? And today we get to talk to an agent, actually. He's a booking agent for TBA Agency based in LA. He's one of the founding partners. He's worked with a lot of big names, including Butmoses, Hot Chip, Caribou, Churches, Omar Apollo, Pablo Vitar, and the list goes on. And I mean, he's also worked with other big agencies before founding TBA. He is Devin Landau. And even though he started out studying anthropology and archaeology in the University of Illinois in Chicago, he ended up being a music agent because he's also an ex-musician. So that's a really cool story. But I wonder, Raul, you know, you and I have worked with agents before. We've worked with promoters as well. Do you think you would have been a good agent?
I don't think so.
Why?
I don't think so because I think I would be too, what's the word? I don't want to say harsh. I don't want to say disillusioned. Just because I get very kind of caught up in the emotions.
You're too nice.
Maybe I'm too nice, but the other thing is it's tough for me to take the rejection. And somebody that has to deal with this day to day, you know,
right,
and handle these kinds of just, you got to be hard. You got to be hard. I don't think I have that kind of personality, you know. But that said, you know, I do love, you were talking about his education and his background. And even though he didn't study music or, you know, becoming an agent or becoming a promoter, you know, you still learn how to work with people and how to preserve an art. And when he talks about that, it's really cool to hear that kind of perspective. And I think that's something that I probably could bring to the table because I'm always in the mentality of working together, not trying to be competitive.
Right.
So I think in that sense, maybe I could be an agent, maybe I could be a manager, maybe I could be a promoter. But yeah, the rejection aspect of it, I think that would hit me a little too hard and I'd get too emotional with it.
I would have thought that you'd be kind of used to the rejection. I mean, being a DJ, you're still an artist. That's not a hard career. You get no's a lot.
Oh, I was going to say, I've been rejected so many times.
Yeah. Or yeah. But I agree with you. I think you're too nice. I think you know, your personality, you're such a freaking sweetheart and, you know, you like people and you like to please people and like, I don't, it's hard.
It takes one to know one, right? I guess
No, I'm way more bitchy than you are. That's for sure. You're way nicer than I am. I think I could be an agent because I do think I can be super harsh and you've seen that side of me, but I tend to gravitate towards music and musicians that I like, and not everybody has my same music taste. So kind of like stepping away from that and watching the trends and following the trends, I think that would be my challenge.
Yeah. It's a tough business. And that's why our hats off to all these people that, you know, they're not seeking the limelight. They're not like, I want to be on stage. No. And you're going to hear this when we ask him straight out. Do you miss that? His response is hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
And you're going to hear that in a little bit. It's like, okay, yeah. So that's why when we get to get that insight and that background, it is really educational and really enlightening. And that's why, you know, speaking to somebody like Devin, who's actually a dear friend of ours and has been to our events, our live Pili, Raul, La Musica events. I've seen him on countless panels and conferences. Yeah, so he, on top of that, he's very knowledgeable. And that's the key. That's the key to speaking to these people like Devin that we're going to get into this conversation momentarily.
Without further ado, here is a special edition of Behind the Industry, aquí en Pili, Raúl, and La Música with Devin Landau. Today is a fun day because we get to talk to a friend of ours. With us today is Devin Landau. He is one of the founding partners and agent at TBA Agency, and he's been in the music industry for a very long time, and his roster is pretty impressive. His roster of artists include guests that we have had here on the podcast, including The Marías, including Buscabulla, Helado Negro, Usted Señálemelo, which is actually our last episode. So check that episode out. They're an amazing Argentinian rock band. But he also has, you know, Bob Moses, Banda Los Chinos, which, by the way, Devin, we want to have on the podcast. So you got to make that happen for us.
Yes.
Yeah. I think this roster is pretty stacked. It's not just a few cool names. It's like, it's pretty stacked, heavily stacked with some great artists.
I mean, Bob Moses, Caribou Churches, and Hot Chip, and the list goes on and on. Tycho, one of my favorites. Devin, welcome to Pili, Raúl y La Música. Finally, we get to have you.
I know. Thank you. It's nice to be invited to have the conversation rather than just going to all your guys' fun parties.
we love having your parties, now because this lineup is like, this could be a pretty cool party. If you put these all together, it would be pretty awesome, right? you can have your own mini festival.
TBD, actually.
Wow. Hey now. What a great variety of artists, you know, and I think that goes to show just your creativity and just the power of your organization and just how you are able to just attract great talent. So congrats on everything.
Thank you. Yeah, we feel very privileged to, you know, have longstanding relationships with our artists, and the origin story of TBA is a unique one. And, you know, we were the first agency to launch out of the pandemic when all of the big corporate agencies were looking at what the future of touring was going to be as a result of COVID. And, I think we had a pretty difficult situation at our previous home at Paradigm, where, you know, they, you know, just decided to cut some losses on their staff.
They were kind of giving up, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to.
But you saw the light. You're like, no, there is a future here. And you and your partner saw it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think we were blessed with the timing of it all because, you know, it's very difficult to put together an agency. It takes a lot of work. And I guess conveniently for us, our jobs in terms of like booking tours and doing all of the, you know, the daily tasks that we are accustomed to were completely out the window. So right. We had time to build the company, and it took us about 5 months or so. And so we started working on it in, I'd say, early April of 2020. And by September 1st, we had launched the company.
That's so impressive. I mean, that's so impressive. That also, you know, it attests to your relationship with artists and how much artists enjoy working with you.
Yeah, I think that was really the kind of that stamp or seal of approval that we thought that we had, but really hadn't been presented with when we said to our clients, hey, we're leaving this big corporate agency. Do you want to come with us? So we retained something like 98% of the artists that we...
Holy shit!
Wow. That's pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the ones that didn't end up coming with us were clients that were represented by multiple agents at the company. Right. And so it was kind of this like stay or go situation. And, you know, I think the the ones that came with us are, you know, they really speak to the type of artists that we want to represent. And it it really gave us that sense of, you know, reassurance with our clients that, you know, they're working with us because of the work that we do and not the name of the agency or any of that stuff. So, we launched TVA in September of 2020. We just had our 3-year anniversary a couple months ago.
Woohoo!
Congrats.
150 artists, and now about 250. And we have a staff of, I believe, 27, 28
wow.
people now.
Wow. That's no longer a boutique, you know, organization.
That's right.
You know, maybe it started like that, but you know what? I think it goes back also to you sound like it's very DIY. It's like, yeah, we can do this ourselves. We don't need this big organization, this big, you know, mega, whatever you want to call it. And I think a lot of the artists that you have kind of share that same mentality. And I'm talking about the duo like Bob Moses, you know, somebody like Roberto Lado Negro, Cuco, you know, these guys, they're very DIY themselves. So they share that same kind of mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like we really, our focus is touring, right? You know, we have a really strong branding and partnerships department and marketing and things like that. But, you know, there are artists that want to cross over into film and TV and, you know, that, you know, have at it. We really try and focus on artists that touring is their main focus and really super serve them.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think the other thing that is really refreshing about the new kind of situation that we're in is, you know, with myself and all of the founding partners, we've been doing this for 80 something years collectively. And we've all worked at different sized companies from independents all the way up to big corporate agencies. And now we're back to really feeling like we're doing the job for the reasons why we got into it in the first place, which is discovering new talent, developing artists, being involved from the ground up and, you know, not being restrictive in terms of, you know, how much money are they going to make in an 18-month period, and really just putting a focus on representing the artists in the music that we believe in.
Right.
I can't say that I am trying to sign artists that are having a moment on TikTok, you know?
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, that's refreshing to hear.
You know, our business is selling tickets. And I think that's not an immediate translation of to tickets. Plus,
right. We know it's about longevity too, but break it down for us. You know, this episode is part of our Behind the Industry series that we launch once a month. And we always want to give our listeners kind of like that, a behind the industry, a look into what happens behind the music industry. So break it down for us. You know, you help organize, you help book, and you help manage artists. But what does your day-to-day look like? And if you can kind of like simplify in a couple of sentences, what is it that TBA agency does and you as an agent does?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, this is a very relationship-driven business. So my day-to-day is literally communicating with people, whether it's phone calls, emails, in-person meetings and stuff like that. That could be reaching out to a promoter and requesting holds for an artist's next tour and negotiating the performances and the deals and all of that. It's calling festival buyers and making sure that they are aware of what is happening with the artist and, you know, making sure that we're getting offers for our clients on festivals. And, you know, it's for me personally, I do a lot of international bookings. So, you know, my day could really be anything can happen on any given day. You know, today's a perfect example. Like, last night, I had an artist named Mora, who's a reggaetonero from Puerto Rico. He's doing his first like real hard ticket headline tour in 2,000 to 5,000 cap rooms in the US. That show ended at like midnight. I got home, and at 5 a.m. this morning, I was dealing with a ticketing issue for a tour that announced and went on sale yesterday in India.
Oh, wow.
It's like the same moment I'm you know, routing tours and booking festivals in Latin America right now, and I'm routing tours and booking festivals in China. So, you know, it is all over the place.
That's crazy.
And the time zones and all of that are unforgiving, but
especially us being on the West Coast too. You know, you mentioned festivals. How has the industry changed in terms of like just being, you know, having your own concert tour versus festival? Like, what's more important? What, you know, what's the biggest difference for an artist and their career path? And for those who are more like Latin alternative, like most of our guests on the show, what do you recommend the most?
Well, it actually really depends on what territory that we're talking about here, because the curation of a festival lineup is really based off of ticket value of the artist. So new artists are always like, I want festivals. I really want to play festivals. And something that I really try to instill in my artist teams with the managers and the artists directly is there's a very fine balance between doing a festival early on in your career or waiting until you're actually valuable enough to get a slot that is going to be positioned appropriately, getting
a bit of prime time
where you're not losing money, you're being paid appropriately. And, you know, some cases it is more valuable for an artist to be on the second to the last line on Lollapalooza in Chicago because, say, they're from Argentina or Brazil or wherever, an artist from an international market like that gets booked on a festival like Coachella or Lollapalooza, that has a trickle down to their home market. You know, they get bigger at home because, you know, they're getting booked on these major kind of general market and reputable festivals. So
is that kind of like what happened to Usted Señalamelo?
Exactly.
You know, they're the first Argentinian band to get booked on Lollapalooza.
Exactly. Yeah. And similarly with Pablo Vittar, when she played Coachella, she was the first drag queen to perform Coachella. The amount of press and everything that was happening for her in Brazil was just monumental.
Right.
Awesome.
So like, you know, there's definitely a really fine balance between a new artist being like, yes, now is the right time to do a festival, or hey, let's develop the headline business. And, you know, that 7,500 or 10K offer to play at one in the afternoon could turn into 30 in 1 year just by developing your own value. So that's kind of like the approach or the model, you know, really being pragmatic about not doing festivals too early, maybe saving the A-level festivals, the Lollas, the Coachellas and all of that, ACL, whatever it may be, to a point where you are more established. But there are plenty of other festivals that are great, that are
smaller,
you know,
maybe
not as like competitive to get on. And those could be more valuable to do earlier on in your career.
So it varies on the artist and where the artist is at in their career.
Totally. And then, you know, if you want to flip it to Latin America, for example, like it's more common for an artist to do a festival like Corona Capital for their first time, because that the ticket buying community there for festivals and the buyers of the festivals get really excited by doing debut plays. Okay. So, you know, it's kind of the reverse where you want to do the festivals first, play in front of more people than you would probably on your debut headline show. And then you get that exposure and then you return to the market and do hard tickets. So,
so interesting.
It is definitely kind of a case by case, place by place.
Right.
Yeah, totally. And you know, hearing you talk about like all these different kind of arms of the industry, and you've kind of been in all of them at some point in your life, you know, whether it goes back to your, you know, event promotion days or playing in the bands or actually and being part of these bands and being able to communicate and handle, you know, all these different personalities and egos. I'm sure that comes into play, and you've been there. So how do you handle those egos? Like when you want to talk to that up and coming band, and you know, what are the recommendations and how do you go about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the path that I took to get here is uncommon, but maybe common in some cases as well. You know, like I was a musician, then I was a promoter. I know what it's like to be on the road. I know what it's like to sleep in a van or on a floor. I know what it is like to have to leave a venue after playing because the routing wasn't done appropriately and it's 10 hours to get to the next city. So you're driving at night, and you're waking up and driving in the morning. And you know, having an understanding of, you know, the technical side of things is super valuable. But then, you know, becoming a promoter, and I think it's important to kind of understand what it's like to be a promoter. And I really try and treat the promoters that I work with as partners. You know, it's not about just chasing whoever has the biggest check. And, you know, I really believe in maintaining promoter history and growing an artist with one individual promoter to a point where it makes sense. And, you know, I think that that kind of perspective comes from having been on that side of the business.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever miss that grind? Do you ever miss that grind of
absolutely
either the promoter side of things or being in the band?
No. You know, when I decided to become an agent, it was for a very specific reason, and it was because I was a horrible promoter. I booked the things that I wanted to see, the things that were not coming to Chicago, which is where I was living when I was promoting shows, and I would have one good show that was profitable and then I'd lose it on the next one. You know, I have a lot of respect for promoters and the business that they do because it is difficult work. So I guess back to your question, Raul, is like, you know, how do I, you know, communicate to new artists? I just try to get on their level. You know, I've been there, I've done it. And, you know, additionally, like the types of artists that I work with, you know, I think I mentioned it before, I'm not chasing artists that are having moments on TikTok or anything like that. I really get inspired and excited about artists that exist in a cultural landscape and are part of a cultural movement. And that is really a result of my academic experience, which, you know, I went to school for anthropology and art history, and I have a degree in archaeology, and I worked in the field in Latin America. It's how I learned Spanish. It's really what got me to loving Latin culture and Latin music. And, you know, I think that my approach to A&R really is inspired by identifying an artist and finding a way to preserve their art for, you know, future generations. And what is more connected to what an archaeologist does than that? You know, you dig up something in the ground and you put it in a museum so people can learn about it.
Totally. The value of education is so key. I mean, even though you're not directly in the music industry, there is that parallel, and I can even relate it. You know, I studied urban and regional planning and architecture in school, and I ended up being a DJ. You know, it's like, but you learn about, you know, exactly that, preserving the art and seeing and learning to learn really is kind of what it comes from, an education. And even though it's not exactly in the field you end up, it still will lead you in the right direction, and it's always going to be helpful.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, I had the option to go to school for something music related, and I chose not to do it because I thought it would ruin it for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that because, you know, back to the type of artists that I work with, I think, and I think that the artists do too, I have a unique approach to this business. And, you know, I think an artist wants to know that the people working behind the scenes on behalf of them understand the landscape that they exist in and right. the message that they want to portray. So, you know, when I am saying like, hey, I want you to have a career for 10, 20 years, let's make sure to not skip steps. Let's not, you know, sell out 2,000 capacity venues and then go to arenas. You know, it's like, let's do things gradual because
right, step by step.
When you skip steps, it's you're literally going down the path of shortening your career.
So what, you know, two questions here. What criteria and characteristics do you look for in an artist before signing them to TBA agency? And the other is, you know, how do you handle when an artist doesn't necessarily follow your advice? Because I'm sure that happens all the time. I love the laugh.
I would say I told you so. Usually that's not necessary because they realize that they had been told that and that it didn't go the way they had planned. You know, it is, I like to think that if people hire me, it's because of my experience and my expertise. And if they don't want to take the advice, then they kind of have to bear that. But it is a delicate thing. You know, it is constantly discussing strategy. And I think when you're educated and you have the experience and you know, if we do A or B, this could be the outcome. You're able to be informed to tell your team, hey, if we do this, it might not go the way that you're thinking. But if we do it this way, maybe it's a safer bet. If I book a show and it doesn't sell out, I don't think that it's a success. So
really?
So that's
wow. So you have really high standards.
Yeah.
Because not all shows are sold out.
No. And I mean, that's not applicable to like every size artist. You know, it's okay. Like if you're doing an arena and you sell 80% of the tickets, like, okay, congratulations.
You're that's good. Yeah.
Awesome. But, yeah. You know, when you're in that developmental stage and you are like working on in 500 cap rooms and you're trying to get to 1500 to 2000, blah, blah, blah. I want to take the approach that there needs to be people that wanted to buy tickets that were not able to. And that is always the, like, that's where I come from, where I want the show to be sold out, because you want there to be a sense of urgency within your fan base
right.
when you announce a tour.
Right.
So if I think artists can sell 1,000 tickets in a market, I'm probably going to want to book like an 800 capacity venue.
Right.
Because I want there to be, you know, people who are like, damn, I should have bought the tickets to the Rawayana tour. Right. I missed out. Next time that they announce tour, I'm going to be on it immediately. That's the advice that I give to the teams.
And that's a great advice.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, and they played a great venue in LA. They played the El Rey, which is a fantastic 800 capacity room. And you know, the next time they're going to come around, yeah. it's like, okay, maybe put them in the region, or maybe put them in a, you know, slightly bigger. Maybe they can do the Nova
or the Ford or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you're bumping up, and it is that, you know, and I love hearing that you're talking about all these different artists and music from around the world. And you're talking earlier, like, oh yeah, you had to wake up and talk about with somebody in India and the whole, you know, time zone thing. But where do you see that going? Where do you see the world of music going? And when you're talking in this kind of global scene where we're so
yeah.
close together now, you know, it's not like yeah. you're not just only going to focus in Latin America or in the US. Now you're talking, oh yeah, these bands from Argentina or Colombia or Venezuela can play in India or China or Japan.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it is a really unique thing, especially in Asia, Southeast Asia, that there is an attraction to artists in the Spanish speaking space. You know, for the first time last year at Splendor in the Grass in Australia, which is a really great
yeah.
festival on
the awesome.
Gold Coast. Yeah. J Balvin was one of the headliners, and that was the first time a Latin artist had ever performed at a festival there. So I really think that it is the world, the boundaries are just being cracked wide open. I think Rawayana is a really great example of this. I booked them globally. And so right now they have a tour on sale in Europe in April of next year. They've almost sold out a 1,200 capacity venue in Berlin.
Fantastic.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
in like a week, they sold out the venue in London. We had to double the capacity in a new venue. While I think that that probably has a lot to do with the Venezuelan expat community in these different cities and countries, sure, they're probably playing to a wider group of their own, you know, people. But I think that is the perfect example right there, is that there are people from Argentina, Colombia, wherever, in every country. Brazil, are you kidding me? I mean, like, there are Brazilians everywhere. I've sent Pablo Vittar to Australia twice already. So
amazing.
You know, and we're having conversations about her going to Japan next year and things like that.
That's so exciting. Devin, what do you think you as a non-Latino, you bring to the table and help these Latino artists as a non-Latino agent?
Well, I think that my approach, because, you know, I've been working in the Latin space for probably a decade now, but I've always represented artists that are in the general market space as well. And I think that having that approach, a general market approach to developing artists in the Latin space, is a unique thing. And, you know, I have a track record of being able to work with artists in the Latin space in markets like the US that are very obviously generally general market driven, where there has been success. So I try to be as honest as possible, as I, you know, I'm very transparent, perhaps to a detriment sometimes. I just tell the artists exactly what's realistic. And, you know, there are other agents out there that'll promise the world and see what happens, but I like to be result driven. So, you know, I make plans. These are the goals. Let's go out and execute them. And, you know, the goals are realistic. And I think when you achieve the goals that you set out to do, then people see that and they trust the person that they're going to be working with.
Devin, we really appreciate your time. And before we let you go, we've seen you on multiple different panels, whether it's South by Southwest in Austin or even in Sydney now, and obviously things like LAMC. But what's the next conference that you're going to be speaking at? Is there any kind of public speaking engagement already? Where can they catch you?
I am.
And ask you questions in person.
Yeah, I'm currently working on getting on a panel for the ILMC, which is in London.
Okay.
The International Live Music Conference. I've actually had to recently turn down two opportunities. One was this week to go to El Sorrido in Bogota, and I have to turn down one in Guadalajara because I will be at the one in London. So it is very much, I think doing the conferences are highly valuable and I actually really enjoy doing them. You never know who you're going to meet through it.
Right.
Often, enough, you know, I get asked to do these like speed meeting things during the conference, which can be a bit laborsome, but, I've met some very incredible people in those that it was, you know, very early on in their career, and they've gone on and done incredible things. And some of them have ended up being managers of clients of mine.
Oh, so that's cool.
Super cool.
That's very
super
cool. Well, thanks, Devin, so much for sharing more of your knowledge and your story here with us at Pilita de la Música. We've worked with you personally. I've booked artists through you, and you definitely, you're very professional. You believe in your artists, which is very important, especially because the three of us love musicians. I think the three of us thrive in music, and we do what we do because our passion for music. So just knowing that these artists, especially some of them who are our friends, like Buscabulla and Roberto from El Lado Negro, it's like, it's really cool to see that they have someone who's genuine in their team. So that's very much appreciated.
Yeah. And giving them that big oomph behind them that they really deserve.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's about.
We can't wait to see who else you add to your roster. Remember that if you ever need to give out some free tickets to anybody on your roster, there's two people right here, both Raul and Pili, that would absolutely take them and enjoy them. So thanks for your time, Devin. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure, and thank you for the kind words. And I look forward to seeing you both again very soon.
Very, very soon. Well, we'll catch you soon, Devin. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Come to our next live event again.
Yeah, please send me an invite.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I would have loved to have seen Devin performing on stage. I'm curious to see his personality when he would be part of a band, or catching him on the street, you know, maybe promoting, handing out a flyer, yes, to one of his parties. It's like, come to my party, come to my gig, you know. But as you heard, he's all, those days are in the past, long gone. I don't miss that grind.
Yeah,
you know, he's taking it to that next level. But you know what? Those fundamental stones in his education and his experiences has really propelled him to where he's at now, and to be, you know, booking these global tours with amazing artists from all over the world. Much respect to Devin for everything that he's done, and for taking a little time to speak with us right here on Pili Raul.
Oh, for sure. And I've had to negotiate with him because I booked one of his artists for an event, and he's very professional, but he's also very like strict. You know, it was not an easy negotiation, but we made it happen. So it's always good to see, like, you know, that side of the person, especially now that I've interviewed him. It's like, I know your work ethic, and it's a good one. It's a great one.
Yeah.
So again, thank you, Devin, and thank you, listener, for your support, for your love, for lending us your ears. Remember to follow us, Pili Raul en la Música, on all social media platforms, especially Instagram and YouTube. And if you like what you hear, hey, rate us. Give us a 5-star. Write a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Pandora, Deezer, wherever you're listening to us. But those ratings and those reviews really, really help us out. So if you can take 2 seconds of your time and your day, we'd really appreciate it.
And you can even let us know, hey, if you have a recommendation of somebody in the industry that we should interview, that you think is a vital part of this world of the music, or an artist that you really love, hey, send us those recommendations. We love that too. And as you heard, you know, the last time we hung out with Devin was at our Pachiman event, which, yes, was live at the Gibson Showroom. We have another one coming up in a short while, and it's going to be with, can we say, Pili?
Yeah, let's say it. With
Las Cafeteras.
Yes.
And that is going to be so much fun. It's going to be at the Gibson Showroom. And send us a message. Follow us on social media. Hit us up on Instagram. Send us a message. And we'll connect that way and send you an invite to it. And hopefully you can be in the house.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. And nada, thank you, Raul, for being such a great host. And I'm excited for our live event coming up in a couple of weeks. Those are always super, super fun. So like Raul said, if you're in LA, hit us up.
Yep, come on down. Come on down. Pili, thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.